Africa. Coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. The White House says the United States had made zero concessions in agreeing to face-to-face talks between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Sarah Huckabee Sanders is the White House spokesperson.
Look, what we know is that the maximum pressure campaign has clearly been effective. We know that it has put a tremendous amount of pressure on North Korea, and they have made some major promises. They've made promises to denuclearize. They've made promises to stop nuclear and missile testing, and they've recognized that regular military exercises between the U.S. and its ally, South Korea, will continue.
The White House is insisting that Mr. Trump's surprise acceptance of a Kim invitation to meet resulted from months of preparation that involved relevant U.S. government agencies. A convoy of relief trucks crossed front lines into the rebel-held Damascus suburb of Eastern Ghouta in Syria and unloaded all of its food to the trapped population. Despite fighting, the Red Cross says is coming extremely close. Fighting between the rebels and the government troops has left at least 900 civilians dead in recent weeks. Officials in the U.S. state of California have released identities of the gunman and the three hostages he killed Friday at a veterans facility. The dead hostages were all mental health workers at the facility for combat veterans experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder. Authorities said that the gunman suffered with PTSD. For details on much more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. The National Rifle Association, the NRA, a U.S. gun rights group, is suing the state of Florida for enacting gun control legislation that raises the minimum age to buy rifles from 18 to 21. The legislation comes 3 weeks after a shooter killed 17 people at Parkland, Florida's Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Lawyers for the NRA are asking a federal judge to block the new age restriction, arguing that it violates the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Florida Governor Rick Scott, a Republican long allied with the NRA, signed the legislation Friday after the Republican-controlled State House narrowly approved the measure. In addition to the new age restriction, the Florida bill also adds a 3-day waiting period to buy long guns, which was previously only for handguns. In Kenya, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says the political reconciliation between President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga is moving in the right direction for the country.
This is a very positive step in our view, and while we know addressing Kenya's ethnic and political divisions will take some time and effort, today both of these men showed great leadership.
Kenyatta and Odinga have met for the first time since last summer's contentious presidential elections to start what they called a push for national unity. Residents in Australia's northern Queensland area are surveying the damage Saturday to their homes after days of heavy rain. In the town of Ingram, north of Brisbane, residents are also having to deal with other threats. Emergency worker Roger Bow.
This is the first time I've ever heard of a bull shark coming into the middle there. So really, it's keep out of the water.
Emergency workers have been using boats and helicopters to deliver necessities, including food and medicine, to those who have been stranded. Demonstrators in Thailand continued Saturday to protest against the military government and push for a general election this year. Around 300 demonstrators gathered on a university campus in Bangkok to hear speeches demanding the often-promised poll be held by November. Thailand's prime minister, a former general who led the 2014 coup that overthrew the democratically elected government, has set timeframes for holding the election on several occasions, but has always then moved the date backwards. France and India have signed agreements intended to boost cooperation in the nuclear, energy, space, trade, and defense sectors. French President Emmanuel Macron and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi attended the ceremony exchange of documents Saturday in New Delhi. For details and more news, join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, reporting here in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga. Peter Clote is away on assignment.
Currently have 70 women who have survivors of sexual assaults and have fistulas as a result. So we do medical support as well.
The United Nations warns more than 2 million severely malnourished children in Democratic Republic of Congo are at risk of dying unless they receive urgently needed aid.
Both of these men showed great leadership in coming together in the agreement that they signed today. And the United States looks forward to supporting the process that was announced.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson hails the political reconciliation between Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga.
The most difficult thing is like when you're women and to play an instrument, to be free to say what you want to say, not your husband or somebody telling you what to do.
And we meet a Paris-based Malian singer and activist known for her unique voice and her powerful songs that support women's rights and the struggle for peace and social justice. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said on Friday that the political reconciliation between Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga is, in his words, a very positive step, adding the United States supports Kenya's political inclusion and democracy. Tillerson's trip to Africa is his first as the top U.S. diplomat, with promoting good governance high on his agenda. VOA State Department correspondent Nike Cheng reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Kenya's top political rivals announced they are coming together to try to unify their country following last year's contentious presidential elections. The meeting took place just hours before Secretary of State Tillerson landed in Nairobi for a three-day visit. Tillerson held the announcement as a very positive step in a joint news conference with Kenya's Foreign Minister Monica Juma.
Both of these men showed great leadership in coming together in the agreement that they signed today. And the United States looks forward to supporting the process that was announced this morning to bring the country together and to address the various national divisions.
Moving forward, Juma said the government of Kenya is committed to a genuine political process based on fundamental values.
I think it is important for me to emphasize that we bestowed upon ourselves a progressive constitution because we believed that only that constitution, only those liberties, only those privileges guaranteed by the constitution would help us to realize our full potential as a country. And that involves a whole range of rights and protection of institutions beyond the media.
Experts say a free and independent media instills public confidence.
It is time for the parties to move forward, but it is the government's responsibility to act responsibly in defense of the rule of law, in defense of the judiciary, in defense of free speech, in defense of protection of the media.
During his visit to Africa, Tillerson says the U.S. will seek to work with the nations, providing them with incentives to improve governance and meet their long-term security and development goals. Nike Ching, VOA News, Nairobi, Kenya.
The United Nations warns that more than 2 million severely malnourished children in Democratic Republic of Congo are at risk of dying unless they receive urgently needed therapeutic aid. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Years of violence and unrest in Democratic Republic of Congo have displaced more than 4.5 million people, creating widespread poverty and hunger. The United Nations refers to the DRC as one of the world's most complex humanitarian crises. It says this catastrophic situation has worsened in recent months because of an uptick in fighting in many parts of the country, causing more people to flee their homes and more people to sell everything they own to feed themselves. UN aid agencies are on the ground ready to aid millions of people in desperate need of humanitarian assistance, but they say they lack the funds to help them. For instance, the UN Migration Agency says its $75 million appeal for DRC has received only $4.7 million. Spokeswoman Olivia Hayden tells VOA that if IOM had more money, it could provide many of the internally displaced with emergency shelters.
We'd be able to help people build homes to be able to live in and be safe from the elements. We're also doing a lot of work with women in the DRC. I think in the last couple of months we've helped about 70 women, or we currently have 70 women who have survivors of sexual assaults and have fistulas as a result. So we do medical support as well.
The United Nations reports children are suffering most from the fighting, instability, lack of food, medical care, and other support. Earlier this year, the United Nations launched its largest appeal ever for the DRC. It asked for $1.68 billion to assist 10.5 million people. So far, it only has received about 5% of that amount. Aid officials say generous contributions from donors could save the lives of more than 2 million children who are at risk of dying because they are unable to get the treatment they need. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
As many Africans themselves know well, China is the continent's number one trading partner, economic investor, and infrastructure builder. Indeed, due to rising labor costs in China and other factors, Chinese industrialists and entrepreneurs have been flocking to Africa, bringing manufacturing know-how and promise. So, in a development that poses immense promise and some risk, this partnership may create an industrial revolution in Africa. That's the view of Iron Tsan, a Chinese-American scholar born in China. The author of the text, of The Next Factory of the World, How Chinese Investment is Reshaping Africa. She spoke recently with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. Adam began their conversation by asking Tsan if she believed Africa really could be the world's next mega economic success story.
Indeed, I do think that Africa has a really good shot of being the next factory of the world. I mean, the structural forces in the world, meaning labor costs in China, are going up such that manufacturing will shift out of China to somewhere else. And if Africa can grab as many of those as possible and increase its competitiveness, increase its productivity off the back of that manufacturing investment, it has the best chance it's ever had of lifting itself out of poverty. When you look at the history of the world, the only way that countries have ever figured out how to lift themselves out of poverty in a sustainable long-term way is through industrialization.
Isn't it also true, though, that industrialization on this kind of scale will mean enormous dislocation for Africa and Africans, even if the net result is mostly good?
I do think that it's important to understand revolutions are not entirely happy processes. Oftentimes, they involve a lot of change rapidly. And that means that, for example, there are many accidents. Workers will die. Often, regulations are not strong enough regarding the environment. In China, industrialization was accompanied by enormous environmental damage. Ordinary Chinese, I mean, my relatives are deeply concerned about their health living in Beijing, for example. And that's something that Africa absolutely has the chance to avoid. Because frankly, one of the few benefits of doing this later is that you could look at everybody else's experiences and figure out how to avoid their mistakes. Africans are amazingly smart, innovative people, and they can figure out a way to industrialize better than we've seen before.
Tell me what's so important about manufacturing, per se, rather than, say, agriculture or the service sector. Why develop industry?
There is something deeply special about manufacturing, which is that, first of all, it employs lots of people, and it employs the sorts of people that can do just fine, even if this is their first formal job in their entire lives. We saw this in China. We saw this in the rest of Asia, Korea, and Japan. And we saw this in America. I mean, this is why we're so nostalgic in the U.S. about the era of, you know, everybody graduating from high school and then getting a great job at a GM or Ford plant for the rest of their lives, right? And that allows their children to go to school and then become college educated and then get the sorts of really great service jobs that we associate with developed country economies, high-tech services, knowledge-based economies.
You write in the book that all this is very personal. You were born in China, of course, in the mid-80s, but then you moved to the U.S. when you were young. What is it about Africa that reminds you of the China of 30 years ago?
All my childhood memories, you know, there's no cars, there's no highways, there's no high-rise buildings. That was China about 30 years ago. And because China became the factory of the world, all of that changed. Now China is like the most highways in the world and so many high-rise buildings. And it is incredibly modern society. And that changed so quickly for 750 million people, the most that has ever been lifted out of poverty in the fastest amount of time in human recorded history. So that's the sort of potential that's there when societies industrialize. And it just signals what a huge sea change could be possible for Africa in our lifetimes. And that's why it matters so much for Africa that it grabs this chance as manufacturing firms are coming out of China to get them to be in Africa. Every country really needs to think through how it can best take advantage, make it real, make it your own, customize it to really unlock the most opportunity, but also manage the risks in the smartest ways.
That was Irene Sun, author of The Next Factory of the World, How Chinese Investment is Reshaping Africa. She spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. And the volatile business environment in Zimbabwe has forced several companies to shut down, particularly in the second largest city of Bulawayo. Many young people have had to migrate or become street vendors to eke out a living. But one young entrepreneur is taking to the business frontier of the World Wide Web and setting up an online radio station. Ade Gondo reports for VOA from Bulawayo.
29-year-old Nkosana Mazivisa is the founder of Mazivisa Incorporated, a consulting firm and a food outlet called Swad, the Taste of India. Forbes Africa magazine in 2016 named him one of the most promising young entrepreneurs on the continent under the age of 30. And next week, he aims to revolutionize the African media landscape by launching the first internet radio station, 19.0 FM, dedicated to the youth in Southern Africa.
19.0 FM is more of a partnership between myself and the South African-based company, 19 FM Media. We thought it's important to break through barriers without having tangible physical radio station, like, for example, Uber. Uber is one of the biggest taxis, but they don't have offices. They don't have, it's just online. We want to go through conventional ways, using smartphones, using tablets. So why then can't we have our own African narrative? Zambia, somebody in Kiarasi can listen to a Zimbabwean voice without them physically traveling.
The business model is different from that of traditional radio.
The moment you download an application, you just buy data. So when you buy data, you start listening. So that is the simplest, that is our value proposition. Ours is not about fixed location. Our telecommunication companies in Zimbabwe will thrive. The more people download our app, the more people buy data, the more they are having revenue.
Mazivisa says the aim is to cover the whole continent using different languages. Different countries will get different programming slots.
So what means anyone who's in Botswana will be listening to Zimbabwe. And also in terms of advertising, our breakfast generating that we're looking at is in terms of advertising. Like companies that are looking at doing business beyond Zimbabwe or inter-trade within countries, they can do it through our platform.
Journalist Lungelo Ndlovu, who is also 29 years old, says he thinks young people in Zimbabwe will be interested in online radio, but warns cost might be a problem.
I think the uptake will be there, but then considering costs that are related to internet, I think it could be feasibility, it could be a challenge for Zimbabweans. But if it's an app that is not heavy, that doesn't cost much, I mean, it really makes sense. But basically, young people are curious about such things. I mean, it's quite interesting. It's an innovation, something different as to our traditional radio stations, and which are also limited.
The GSM Association, which represents mobile communications companies, says the countries in the Southern Africa Development Community have the highest smartphone penetration rate in Africa. Young entrepreneurs such as Mazivisa are looking to capitalize on that demand for mobile services to develop new businesses. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo.
And in Rwanda, gender-based discrimination in the workplace continues and disproportionately affects women. This according to several reports by Transparency International. While the country has made impressive progress both in the fight against corruption and the promotion of gender equality, many women are being forced to offer sex in exchange for jobs and decent salaries. Ingabire Marie Imakli is the chairperson of the Transparency International Rwanda. She spoke with reporter Eugene Uimana about the labor market and women.
Gender-based corruption or harassment at working places is a sad reality. They affect labor market in several ways. First of all, you can't be sure to have a staff well qualified when there are gender-based corruption. Even those who are qualified as such, but they don't pay a lot of effort to achieve or to implement because they need a kind of protection. Another thing, it's in terms of values and also accountability. They don't want to denounce. It creates also negative solidarity. But on another side, they discourage those who were ready to deliver. So I think it's really a very, very bad practice. It should stop.
How would the market be more fair, and how would families benefit if there was no gender bias?
First of all, in terms of service, they will have very good service, but also everybody will have same chances and opportunities, which is fundamental in human rights issues.
How can the government or private businesses and educational institutions end harassment against women?
First of all, I think they have to accept that we have that problem and we should stop it. And then they can even set a mechanism internally in the institution. Somebody honest in charge of receiving complaint of a staff on that issue, even to receive information, but they don't do. They say it's very difficult to have facts. No, they don't take it seriously.
The government has encouraged women's participation in the politics, and in particular in the legislature. Have government institutions like the legislature and other government bodies been surveyed for harassment?
This time we worked only on public institutions, and what we found is that there is a lot of sexual harassment.
Have women legislators or political parties spoken out or taken a public stand? If so, what have they done to protect women from harassment?
MPs themselves, women, they were the first to say that, no, we don't agree with that. No, it can't happen in Rwanda. What can be the next? If the responsible of the country that don't want to accept the reality, for us, what we can do is just to continue with our business and to ignore them.
Is the government taking any new moves against harassment? Will the parliament introduce any new measures?
No. Government in Rwanda, in general, government is against that. And there are some institutions which could do something on that. So the gap is there. Sometimes we have problem with decision makers, not with the political will or the national police as such. We have a draft law now. You know, so far, if you receive a message, for example, text message harassing you or asking you about that, it can't be taken as a fact or a proof. Even if you can have an audio, it's not accepted by the police. By now, not yet, the bill in the parliament accepts that those evidence can be taken seriously by the police. Mm.
What legal steps can women take today to bring to book managers and others who harass them or who discriminate against them in the workplace?
It's accepted by the law, but they don't report enough. Because we had a question in our questionnaires. The question was, why you didn't report? And the answer, around really 8 over 10, they said, no action taken. Because they know some others who reported, but no action was taken. So others are discouraged.
What protections are there for women that there will not be retaliation for their speaking up against unfair labor practices or mistreatment?
There is a protection. We have a public commission for labor. We have National Women's Forum. We have police. We have gender monitoring office. We have civil society organizations. They can be protected. But there is also on their side a lack of self-confidence. There is a fear. They don't want to lose their job. It's a bit complicated.
That was Ingabire Marie McLee, chairperson of Transparency International Rwanda. She spoke with reporter Eugene Uwimana from Kigali. Today we meet Fatuma Diawara, the Paris-based Malian singer and activist known in both West Africa and the West for her unique voice and her powerful songs that support women's rights and the struggle for peace and social justice. Viewers Adam Phillips spoke with Diawara hours before her recent performance at the New York's Carnegie Hall and has this profile.
That's Fatoumata Diawara singing Muso, one of her many songs that combine world beat and Malian influences. She prefers the name Fatoumata, not Fatou, the diminutive form of her name. She says that when people struggle a bit to say her name, they're also making an effort to know who she really is. Diawara's gentle insistence on being seen for who she really is has its roots in her youth in Mali, where being a female artist can mean being disempowered.
The most difficult thing is like when you're women and to play an instrument, to be free to say what you want to say, not your husband or somebody telling you what to do. This was the first challenges to me because I don't like people to impose something, you know. That's why I write my own song, I compose everything, I do the arrangement.
As a child, Diawara knew pain. Her sister died when she was 7, and she was deeply affected by the suffering of others.
I was crying for people in the streets. I can't believe that life could be difficult for some people and why you must be sick. Thank to God, why is not perfect for everyone? How I can accept things? And the only answer that I got, it's when I started to sing. Suddenly I can find my smiling.
When Diawara was 19, she fled to Paris to avoid an arranged marriage. But she soon realized that in France, female artists also face challenges.
But I didn't give up. I said, okay, we must change this. You must be able, as a woman, to be free to express yourself. Because as a woman, I got a lot to say. Coming from Africa, I have a lot to share.
Diawara wrote this song, sung here for VOA, to honor mothers and all women.
Mama. Mama, 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 yeah.
Diawara is an activist for women's rights. She sings against child marriage, female genital mutilation, and war.
The war, especially, because how a woman can be happy if she cannot see the future for her children, for the next generation? We need a change. We need a love. We need unification to enjoy life because it's short. We can't live just fighting each other. We don't need it.
When violence broke out in northern Mali in 2012, radical Islamists attempted to outlaw music. Diawara returned to her native land and joined with 40 Malian artists to record her peace song, Maliko. Like them, Diawara dreams of one world where life is not about us versus them.
It's like when you go in the wild, you see the flowers, they are all different and they are happy together because your differences, I can learn from you. You don't need to be from my country to understand what I'm saying. You don't need to be from Africa to feel what I want to share with you because I'm telling you my truth. And this is the truth that the world needs. Artists, we fight for this truth because inside of this truth and behind this truth, there are love. You can't make music without love.
Fatoumata Diawara is on a world tour that will take her from Carnegie Hall in New York to 13 countries. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. And still to come in the program, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. Yes, it's now time for our Saturday music spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great African music.
You are my special woman. You are my special queen. your sexy body. Me love the way you move, you they make me sudgy. Mr. DJ, you too savvy. So pan the silence for this party. Baby girl, make it come to daddy. Make you sip some Hennessy and Bacardi. Daddy, go rock you steady. Cause you got me going on, eh.
Daddy, where you do me, they move me, they make me, they throw.
I promise I'll be loving you forever.
I'll be a better man. I'm ready. Got no time for story, no time to be acting funny. And I hope you understand, I will give you no regret. And I swear, if you are my girl, I'll take you around the world. I'll take you places where you've never ever been before. So give me your hand, I'm giving you my word. I promise I'll be loving you forever.
Shake body. Everywhere now, all the way
shout hallelujah, eh. I say all the blessings and love I they see just they make me they shout hallelujah, eh. They hold me for ransom cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. They won't hold me for ransom cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. Oh yeah, shake body. Oh yeah, move body. Make you ring alarm. Oh yeah, shake body. Coupe, 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 décalema. Décalema. Cricata, cricata. Parote. Équilibré, 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 équilibré. Parote. Oh yeah, shake body. Oh yeah, move body. Make you ring alarm. Oh yeah, shake body.
It's the
hey, come on. Flip the eyes on the beat. Hey,
me and Gina.
Yeah.
moze, tamu zaidi ya vanilla. Yani kuki umoze, kama pochi na ngawira. Sani patie doze, kasi tajani panira. Sinifanyia joze, tange tange kajamira. I say, yo fire baby.
Fire, 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 baby. Aka,
fire, oh, oh.
Fire, 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 baby.
Your love is sweet.
Fire, 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 baby. Aka,
tamu paka mwisho.
Fire, 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 fire.
Wasi wasi ndo wakina kwa kosina. Yuta njema lifajiri chana uzima. Wana kesha kulitabiri bendo kuchina baby. Tena wengine wakubwa mili watu wazima.
Tanga kunani kurugu mechi mkwa kwani. Mtoto tari wakandana. Samba chumbani yendo mesi uwanjani. Sini pie simba ya
Nduma kama tsunami. Jinsi kuna tetem. Sura zari na sani. Shepu sepetu em. I say, yo fire baby yo.
Fire, 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 baby.
Fire, oh, oh.
Fire, 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 baby.
Akicheka sura kito.
Fire, 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 baby.
Ini busa kabisa no moto.
Fire, 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 baby.
Let me tell you something about this bobo.
Yes, that was a Saturday music spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Said Hamdun, and our engineer tonight, Justin Twites, we thank you for joining us. I'll see you tomorrow Sunday. I'm Douglas Mpuga.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. government, through the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, is assisting the government and people of Malawi to combat the invasive crop pest called fall armyworm. USAID's assistance has included media campaigns to educate farmers on pest identification and control, in-person trainings with farmers, technical messages for use by extension workers, distribution of 1,400 pheromone traps as part of a national monitoring and early warning system, and funding to test 11 pesticides for efficacy in controlling fall armyworm. USAID also facilitated a recent trip to Malawi by South African experts to assess the situation and provide training on pest identification, estimation of infestation rates, and control measures to public and private sector extension workers. To combat the spread of the fall armyworm across the African continent, international experts recently gathered to produce a new comprehensive integrated pest management guide to help scientists, extension agents, and farmers tackle the voracious fall armyworm. It is based on scientific evidence and contains expert advice for plant protection organizations, extension agencies, research institutions, and governments working with the smallholder farmers to better understand fall armyworm and the agricultural challenge it will pose to Africa for years to come. USAID also recently announced the Fall Armyworm Tech Prize to source digital solutions that can help identify and provide actionable information on how to treat fall armyworm. Innovators can learn more and apply at fallarmywormprize.org. The fall armyworm can feed on 80 different crop species, including maize, a staple food produced by over 300 million African smallholder farms. Since its 2016 discovery, the crop pest has since been reported in over 40 sub-Saharan African countries, posing a significant threat to food security, income, and the livelihoods of smallholder farmers. Without proper control measures implemented, the pest could cause extensive yield losses to maize crops, estimated between $3.6 and $6.2 billion per year across 12 major African maize-producing countries, according to an evidence note published by the Center for Agriculture and Biosciences International in September 2017. The United States is proud to work with its partners to help Malawi and other countries in Africa combat a serious threat to food production and livelihoods of hundreds of millions of farmers and rural communities.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.